Danny boy, the pipes are calling from glen to glen and down the mountainside. The summer's gone and all the roses falling. It's you, must go, and I must buy. But come ye back, when summer's in the meadow, or when the valley's hushed and white with snow. It's I'll be here in sunshine or in shadow. Oh, Danny boy, oh, Danny boy, I love.
Liam McNally, I think he was 12 years old when he sang that song about 4 years ago. And then there's Bing Crosby from 1945. So happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. Well, my kids are half Irish, half German. Yeah. And my wife's maiden name was Kathleen Murphy. How about that? So, they got a little of the blarney. I don't know where I picked it up, because I'm German Scotch. Because those Scotchmen are pretty bunch of... they got a lot of bullshit in them, too. And it is the third month of 2015, and it is the 17th today on Tears Day. I always know Tears Day because the trash man comes today, and my dog just loved to go through their fits about the trash man. Yeah. These are, you know, we have these very, very down-to-earth type excitement around here in Indiana. Right here in north central Indiana, where it's colder than a, well, I won't say it again. You've heard it many times. The wind chill is a bitch, and I had my shorts on this morning. I went out to do some work, went to town, and boy, I'll tell you, Mother Nature, give me a break. Come on, Mother Nature. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations. If you don't have them in for this month, you better get at it. Yeah, better get at it. And that's where you send your snail mail. And, of course, your donations could be cash, check, money order, but whatever you send, make sure you put your email address on it. Even on PayPal, you can put your email address on there. It's more important than a physical address. That's right. And then go up to resist.com, our giant website, and also spread the word that we got a Twitter account there, so you can tell everybody, go over there on Twitter, and I make some pretty audacious statements on there, I'll tell you. Well, we've got a question, a mailbag question here from some person. Hello, my question is the Klan always Christian identity? Well, no, it wasn't Christian identity up until the, probably it was around the early 80s that Christian identity started to get involved. In fact, I was Christian identity when I was in a Klan for several years. And so it went on from there, and a lot of Christian identity people became Klansmen. But certainly not all, and for the most of the history of the KKK, they were not Christian identity. However, they did promote the idea of Christianity. Also, do all Christian identity people believe in the one drop rule in terms of purity, defines who's white, and the Klan, as well as also did the Klan always go by the one drop rule? Because I spoke to a guy once claiming Indian blood native from long ago, but got into the Klan because I heard in certain states in the American South someone with 1/16th American Indian was white by law. Same in National Socialist Germany. If someone had less than a quarter Jewish blood, they could be Germans. I'm asking, in history, did the Klan ever believe Jews are Israelites? Yes, they did believe that they're Israelites, but they believed much differently than most that the Israelites were Aryans and progenitors of our race. I used to sort of go along with that too, but I don't believe that anymore. And the one drop thing, that's pretty much a canard. There's no possibility of you being considered a Negro or anything else with just one drop of blood. That's like the extreme thoughts on that is the kind of people who say, well, if you were dying on the highway and you needed a blood transfusion, would you take it from a black? Well, according to that theory, you'd be a Negro. Of course I'd take it to survive. No, there's a lot of BS. I remember Colonel William Gale out west in his church. He used to preach that one drop theory. Well, I'm afraid that if you went by that, I don't think my good buddy Pastor Gale would have been allowed into church, because he definitely had a very dark suntan. Let's put it that way. He was not a real white, Nordic kind of guy. So I think that I had some stuff on his history, and I think he does have had some Indian in him. But anyhow, no, we don't buy a lot of this stuff. We believe that people are, you're white, and white doesn't necessarily mean you're bleach white. That does mean it's your civilization, your culture, your practices, and so forth, and it has a lot to do with physical appearance, but for most of the people that have been in Europe in the past, whether southern or northern, are generally acceptable into the Aryan body, so to speak. And remember, I only use Aryan as a compliment to those who deserve it, not as necessarily a physical identification, but as an Aryan, someone who deserves love and respect for the things they do for their race. So most people, I would not give them the honor of being Aryan, even as just a ceremonial situation. So anyhow, yeah, a lot of guys have this Indian thing. Of course, it got to be sort of a big deal for people to brag about being part Mongol. They don't, next time somebody brags about being part Indian, say, "You mean you're proud of being Mongol?" Because that's where they came from, over the Bering Straits and so forth, or maybe even on a raft or something. But the people that came down here came from Asia, and they were Mongols. And you can easily see that in a purebred Indian from most of the tribes. Now, of course, the tribes in the east were quite a bit different, at least some of them. And so anyhow, that's the way that goes. And National Socialist Germany, that was a mixed up mess. And Hitler even mixed it up and screwed it up even more. People who had, in other words, there's no Jew blood. I mean, there's no Jew gene. These are just people that, whatever race they are, that follow the Abrahamic religions, the part of it that's Judaism, which spawned Christianity and Mohammedism, Islam. So there were a hell of a lot of good white people that might have had an ancestor that had adhered to Judaism, but they didn't have anything to do with it. And they got picked up with a lot of the others and shipped out. I mean, it was crazy. The policy was crazy. It didn't stick with logic the way the German and the Nuremberg laws were. And so I like if he acts like an Aryan, talks like an Aryan, walks like an Aryan, and looks like an Aryan, then he's an Aryan. Now, if you could quit being a Baptist, why can't you quit being a Jew? I mean, I've always asked that question too. The ones that people see, there's a difference, the Ashkenazim and the Sephardic. The Sephardic tended to be the more Europeanized and even acceptable in white European society, where the Ashkenazim were more from the eastern areas with the Asian mongrel look in many cases. They have that distinct look. That's not necessarily because they're into Judaism. It's because the area they come from and the way they live. It's more of an ethnic thing. So, but the right wing, and I must claim I was wrong too along the lines on a lot of things. But I learned because I studied and kept studying and learning more about race and so forth. And so, like I say, then when I say somebody's a part Jew, I always say, well, what part of that person is Jewish? So I think I come from the school that says I think you can quit about anything or you can subscribe to about anything. And to be judged in a lump is a broad swath is a dangerous policy. And anyhow, that's now down here in this letter to me, he says, Evans conceded that some Jews might indeed become true Americans. Well, I don't know what a true, that's another problem. What the hell's a true American? A true American? Well, you can live from all the way down to the southern tip of South America and I guess be a true American, so that doesn't mean, that's too vague. And then he says, the Jews' abilities are great. He contributes much to any country where he lives. Some do, some don't, just like any other race. This is particularly true of the Western Jews, those of stocks we have known so long. Their separation from us is more religious than racial. That's true. When freed from persecution, these Jews have shown a tendency to disintegrate and amalgamate. That tends to be true. You know, I've known a lot of Jews who were very, they were even pro-Hitler, and I knew one Jew, a working class Jew, that he didn't have those Asiatic looks or Ashkenazim looks, and he used to go around with Gerald L. K. Smith speaking from the platform back in the 30s, speaking and screaming against the rabbis and the control that these people have on the Jew people. Then this guy goes on, "We may hope that shortly in the free atmosphere of America, Jews of this class will cease to be a problem." Well, the problem there is that the B'nai B'rith International Masonic group that pretty much runs and controls Jewry and all their chief rabbis and all that tend to keep pushing them back together. See, a lot of those hierarchy people were sort of happy in the beginning with what Hitler was doing, because there was too much intermarriage in Germany. It had been going on for hundreds of years, and they were people who had Jew in the background had been absorbed. And hell, I mean, thousands of them fought on the side of Germany in World War I, and thousands of them fought on the side of Germany in World War II, according to the latest research. But, and then, of course, they don't get any help from a lot of the right wing either, like I used to be. Well, if you're a Jew, that's it. You're done. Screw you. But I do know this, that I have worked for Jews in the past in Southern California for about 4 or 5 years, a couple of Jews. They treated me fine. They paid me well and were very unhappy when I left. So, you know. "We may hope that shortly in the free atmosphere of America, Jews of this class will cease to be..." Oh, yeah, I already read that to you. Then that was something he was quoting. Then he goes on, "Not so with the Eastern European Jews of recent immigration." You see, that's your Ashkenazim Jews. And they tend to be the non-white, non-Aryan type. The classic ones you see in the cartoons with the big nose and the slanty eyes and all that shit. And when Hitler was starting to put a plan together to get rid of the Jews, in the beginning he was not talking about the Sephardic Jews. The Sephardic Jewish organization supported him 100% to get rid of these Ashkenazim Jews. Yeah. Then it says, "They were not true Jews." Well, what the hell's a true Jew? What the hell's a true anything? Define that for me. "Anthropologists now tell us that these are only Judaized mongrels, Khazars." Well, anybody could become a Jew. I mean, you know, you can be issued into the Jewish religion in 24 hours because rabbis around the country advertise that. So now a lot of course your Orthodox Jews would not accept them, but other areas of Judaism does accept all kinds of people who are not with a background of being Jew. "Unlike the true Hebrew, there was little hope." That whole Hebrew thing is a mixed bag, too. I mean, it's not very well understood. You know, like they said, all this, what was it, the rabble that left Egypt? Well, now the research, even in Israel, has found that never happened. All these Jews that ran off from Egypt, it didn't happen. In fact, there's a whole lot of Jewish researchers now that are debunking almost all that Old Testament shit that has been spun to the people, you know? So anyhow, let's see here. This is an area where it can get sticky because the right wing, and I was too, stuck in a mold for so long. That one drop and you're a nigger. You have one drop of Negro blood and all that kind of stuff. I believe it was 1/16th or 1/32nd that they talked about down south during the plantation days. Anyhow, that's my comment. If you've got anything you want to say about it and say I'm full of shit, well, get in touch with me. Another subject, along the same lines, though. This Nazi thing has just got, it's so ridiculous. There's no National Socialist parties around. There never was a National Socialist party of any size at all in the United States. Not since World War II. And I mean, there even wasn't before that. There was no National Socialist Party. There was the Bund, that I guess you could consider sort of a party in this country. But now I see over in Ukraine that the people in the East are so afraid of this Ukrainian setup because there's so many neo-Nazis. Well, believe me, I think maybe a few dozen so-called neo-Nazis went down there to fight on the side of this capitalist Jewish government in the Ukraine. But they're just a small group, and they don't represent National Socialism. Most of these people don't even know what National Socialism really was or is. And so they're using that, and that's the same way that I called out some CIA National Socialists, and I've told you about it in the past. I fronted, I outed them out of the closet that they, in fact, controlled directly by the CIA and out doing all kinds of bad things. And most of the so-called modern Nazism is a false front just to cause trouble. They're not really committed to what National Socialism was created for in the beginning. And it wasn't for waging international war, and it wasn't for genocide, it wasn't for anything like that. It was just to even up the playing field economically and so forth in Germany. They wanted to the old inherited estates of these rich, super rich that were passing on their millions to their kids and stuff. And they wanted to break up these big land holdings and things like that, sort of a populist thing. And they wanted to internally improve Germany. But when Uncle Adolf got a hold of it, it totally went wonker, and unfortunately. And we're stuck with this Hitler worship today. I used to sort of look the other way and even get a little excited about it in the years past, but no, it's dangerous. It's dangerous, and we should get away from it because there's still all kinds of young people coming on board in the racial struggle that are being sold this this type of Nazism instead of National Socialism. And same way with fascism, you know, they're sold. Actually, what's going on in Ukraine is predatory capitalism is in control, and control of the armies and everything else, and they're moving in there to steal everything the Ukrainians have, and they're going along with NATO and Wall Street. And the son of the vice president is over there. He's got big investment there in eastern Ukraine and into giant gas deposits, and they're fighting all around that area, but they're guarding those gas deposits greatly. So it's all about money. So I wish people quit calling it Nazism, because it has nothing to do with any kind of understanding of National Socialism. It's just some guys that want to raise hell and shoot people and so forth, and they're tying in with the side that they think is going to get it done. Well, any true National Socialist would never ever get in bed with the leaders in Ukraine. I can see them getting in bed with the Russian, pro-Russian element, but never with that gang of predatory capitalists in Kiev. Of course, the so-called neo-Nazi thing has been totally devised and promoted by the corporate media. That's who really promote it and push it and make all these Nazi movies, anti-Nazi movies, all that kind of stuff. And the young guys who are still hung up on that Hollywood Nazism is what it is, should get out of it, because you're just helping your enemies. You're helping the very people you think you're fighting. And it's very simple. You can be a racial separatist, or you can be a white supremacist, too. You can do that. I mean, nobody can stop you. And who knows who's the better in that deal, separatism or superiority. Something that's very attractive, white superiority and white, but it's not very practical, you know. Klassen was a good man, hard to get along with, but a good man. But this idea you're going to wipe out all the non-whites in the world, that's as illogical as trying to wipe out all the Jews. You're not going to wipe out all the Jews. You're not going to wipe out all of everybody. The white race is in trouble, but you're not going to wipe out the white race. I don't care how hard they try. The problem is the people at the top, the predatory capitalist whites, and predatory capitalist Asians, predatory capitalist even Negroes, or billionaire Negroes, are right in there with them. So that's something you have to concern yourself with quite a bit. But I'm telling you, things are going to change, and Mother Nature is going to be one of the reasons for the big change, and a lot of the things that we've screwed up and screwed around, the ecology and all that, and chopping down all the trees and everything else. This system is bringing on its own demise. There's going to be millions of people hurt and killed and starved to death, and America could become like the third world is now. There's nothing that can keep it from doing that if you keep importing more people into the country, and especially the lower elements that are coming into the country. They can only contribute labor, and how much in labor do we need? Because most cases we can be almost totally mechanized. But with shipping all the jobs and the corporations going overseas, of which they should be punished, I mean punished for, like the Chinese punish them, it's a crazy deal. It's a crazy deal. So our so-called government, I mean the oligarchs have taken out of the tax money, again, this year, $750 billion. $750 billion for the war machinery, war products, more bombs, more A-bombs, more rockets. Well, shit, you cry about your infrastructure. You can't rebuild the infrastructure when you're spending $750 billion, and that's just the stuff we see on war and occupation of other countries. And the occupation of other countries is what I've said leads directly to wholesale migrations of people just to get out of the war zone. So when you say we get pissed off, they come over here, we put up, we allow NAFTA, and that was destroying the economy of Mexico. And then we get all pissed off because the Mexicans come up here. And I do too. But who caused that? It's all these goddamn corporations that caused this eternal problem around the world. And then other countries have to suffer for it. I mean, there are millions of people in the Middle East that had no desire to come up and live in France or England or the United States. But when you make, when you bomb everything out and kill their people and burn their towns and put nuclear waste into their area and they can't grow anything and everything goes to shit, what do you think they're going to do? They're going to march to get something. March to survive. And so who's our enemy? Well, shit, it's most of them are white, and they're right there in Washington. The United States State Department is probably one of the most corrupt departments in the country. And, of course, you got the people like Bush, and you got people like Cheney, you got all those kind of guys. And they are totally rotten, absolutely the core, and would walk over a million bodies if they can make any money. So our enemy is here. The British enemy is there. The German enemy is in Germany. I don't have to go to Africa or Mexico, or I don't even have to go to South Chicago to find an enemy. I know who they are. And they're not the people on the bottom, believe me. If there's any killing going to be done, it should always start at the top. And they got that, Mr. FBI? Mr. CIA? That's what I believe, because I'm an ideological terrorist. And so far, that's not illegal. Okay? But I'm sure it's going to be illegal one of these days. Well, to show you how ridiculous and how phony most of the Klan leaders in the right wing were and are, Bill Wilkerson came into the picture back about, in the early 70s. And he was in David Duke's Klan, Bill Wilkerson. He got in a power struggle with David Duke, and he thought he could win the leadership of the Knights of the KKK, which he had no chance. Duke was extremely popular at the time. So they had a struggle and a falling out. And then Bill Wilkerson took his Klan on the road. I met with Bill Wilkerson a couple of times. One time in North Central California, and then I was supposed to have a meeting with him at Camp Pendleton, California, later on. Since he'd been in the Navy or something like, some kind of military situation, the night I was supposed to have a meeting with him down by Camp Pendleton, he was staying in Camp Pendleton for a couple of nights, I guess, which I was very suspicious. Why is he a notorious so-called Ku Klux Klaner? Why is he allowed to stay in the billets on the base? But anyhow, he pleaded with me in North Central California, and, well, I didn't get to meet him at night because he never showed up, to come with him and move away from David Duke's Klan. That must have been about 72 or 73. I remember the situation where David Duke tried to buy the mailing list of the Klan. You know, Klan's supposed to be a secret organization, but they have a practice of selling mailing lists, you know, so doesn't make it very private. David Duke Wilkerson recorded a meeting between him and David Duke where Duke wanted to buy Wilkerson's mailing list. And Wilkerson wanted $30,000 for the mailing list, which either Duke didn't have or he didn't want to pay that for it. That was one of the situations. Later on, I found that Bill Wilkerson was a informant for the FBI. This is not just idle gossip. It came out even in the news that he had been an informant for the FBI for a long time. Now, I hadn't heard from Bill Wilkerson other than the fact I've heard a couple of things in the past few years, but nothing substantial about whatever happened to Bill Wilkerson. Well, I'm going to show you and tell you and let you hear what happened to Bill Wilkerson. Bill Wilkerson ended up leaving the country, which I'd never been told. And he was interviewed in a non-white nation where he's living I guess, the good life, probably still getting paid, probably, for his FBI services, which is typical of most of the leadership of the right wing. Hold it. Hold it.
Life is real good. It's full of, at least the island that I'm on, San Pedro is full of very friendly people and honest and have a good relationship with them.
Some people would be a little confused, perhaps mystified by your decision to, after 8 years at the head of one of the most racist organizations in the world.
That was 10 years, and we don't define ourselves as racist.
Let me say that the cross is an inspiration, a sign of the Christian religion, a symbol of faith, hope, and love. We do not burn but light the cross to signify that Christ is the light of the world.
People might be a little confused about your decision to move to an island entirely populated by black and minority groups.
Yeah. That's just because they've never been here.
Every day, as you've just shown us today, you intermingle with blacks, with Mayans, with Spanish. You have admitted that you're friendly with people, you have friends. People have said to me that they are your friends. That is intermingling with other races.
Well, that's your definition.
But do you not understand that that's hypocritical? What you're saying is hypocritical.
No, you just choose to misdefine segregation. We in the South, in the 50s, 60s, forever, there was blacks and whites and everything living in the community. Now, by choice, the blacks lived in one area, the whites lived in another, mostly. But there were areas where they intermingled. We never sought to impose our values on anybody else. We just sought to be allowed to live by our values.
Seeing you today, mixing with people, you know, you gave a drink to a Rastafarian. You were fist bumping the locals. You were hugging a black lady. Now, you said that race mixing is worse than murder. Does that mean that you've changed?
I can't recall that, and I seriously doubt that I said it, to be honest with you.
Have you changed?
I'm still a segregationist in the fact that I don't believe that their schools should be integrated. I don't believe that people should intermarry. But even when I was the Imperial Wizard, I was a contractor. I had black subcontractors that I hired routinely. I'm not, and never have been, anti-Semitic or anti-Buddhist or anti-Muslim. Other religion. We believe that the Christian religion is the best, and I still do today, is the most accurate. We don't take an opinion on whether the Buddhists and the Muslims and the whatever are not going to their version of heaven. We don't pass judgment on that. That's for Jesus Christ to do.
Now, what we saw today, where you were mixing with the locals, the black population on this island, do you not think that some of your former members will have been upset by that sight?
I don't think so.
Come on. I mean, these are the things that would have churned the stomach of Klansmen in the 70s and 80s.
It's hard to say.
Can you not admit that you've changed?
I can't pass judgment on myself on that. Other people are going to have to do that.
Do you think your views have mellowed?
Same answer to that one. I'll have to, you know, let other people from the outside. I can't judge myself. I can't make that judgment. If that's for other people, you can make it. Others can make it.
Well, I sent you out more on the story of Bill Wilkerson, and I hope you enjoy it. Knowing the damage he did to a lot of people's lives and the money he took off with and the FBI informing he did, it doesn't make me very happy to see him lounging on the beach in Belize, buying a hotel with partial Klan money and the rest FBI money. And whether you like it or not, Duke is out of the same mold, only he's got more finesse. Duke's going to ride this anti-Zionist thing as long as he can. And when it runs out, you'll see a tell-all book. You'll see an all-out tell-all book come out. You wait and see. You know, Putin disappeared for about 10 days. The whole world went crazy. Where's Putin? Do you think people would get excited if Obama disappeared for 10 days? I don't think so. Well, Lawrence of Arabia, he's a person who is somewhat of a mystery. There's many views of Lawrence. If you haven't seen the movie, of course, you know how movies are. It was a very good movie. I guess he originally was sent down to the Middle East to be the front man for the British. But in the process, allegedly, he began to have sympathies with the Arabs. And now here's a short article. Scott Anderson, in a recent biography, suggests that although T.E. Lawrence underwent an apparent conversion to Zionism after a 1918 meeting with Chaim Weizmann, quote, there was a marked limit to that conversion. To Anderson, Lawrence's support for Zionism was a tactical and perhaps cynical ploy with little staying power. Not so, writes Raymond Stock. Lawrence's commitment to Zionism ran much deeper. Whoa. Lawrence published in the influential British periodical Round Table, assessing the Zionist project in Palestine, quote, the success of the Zionist settlement plan will involve inevitably the raising of the present Arab population to the Zionist's own material level, and the consequences might be of the highest importance for the future of the Arab world. It might well prove a source of technical supply, rendering them independent of industrial Europe. And in that case, the new confederation might become a formidable element of world power. One can hardly be more pro-Zionist than that, and arguably no more pro-Arab either, by placing Lawrence, a champion of both causes, essentially on just one side of that tragic divide. At least in his heart of hearts, Anderson was rendered a less than reliable narrative. That's a pity for the complex and balanced message of this enduringly enigmatic figure has great value both for his time and our own. So anyhow, that's another thought on T.E. Lawrence. Well, here's the latest thinking out of Israel, looks like, by the establishment. Is military action to prevent Tehran from acquiring a nuclear weapon unthinkable since we've got 200? Defenders of the White House's negotiation with Iran have repeatedly argued yes. Joshua Murachik disagrees. Sanctions may have induced Iran to enter negotiations, but they have not persuaded it to abandon its quest for a nuclear weapon. Well, why shouldn't they have a nuclear weapon? Everybody else does, even Pakistan, India, Israel, all of them got that. I don't understand the situation. I wish nobody had it myself. Sanctions could succeed if they caused the regime to fall. the end of communism in Ukraine and Kazakhstan and of apartheid in South Africa led to the abandonment of nuclear weapons in those states. And I wonder where they went. I wonder where those South African nukes went. But since 2009, there have been few signs of rebellion in Tehran. Otherwise, only military actions by Israel against Iraq and Syria and through the specter of U.S. force against Libya have halted nuclear programs. Sanctions have never stopped a nuclear drive anywhere. Oh, pardon me. Does this mean that our only option is war? Yes, although an air campaign targeting Iran's nuclear infrastructure would entail less need for boots on the ground than war Obama is waging against the Islamic State, which poses a far smaller threat. Well, that's interesting. Guess whose boots it's going to be? They're going to be worn by Americans from the Middle West and the South. Wouldn't destroying much of Iran's nuclear infrastructure merely delay its progress? Perhaps, but we can strike as often as necessary. The United States would have to make clear that it will hit wherever and whenever necessary to stop Iran's program. In other words, what Israel wants, Israel gets. Objections that Iran might conceal its program so brilliantly that it could progress undetected all the way to a bomb aptly equally to any apply equally to any negotiated deal with Iran. Well, but one question, if they get a bomb, you know, these bombs, they're pretty big. How are they going to fly it all over there to Israel with Israel with a pretty good air force, thanks to the United States, and the United States running interference for them? They couldn't get a bomb over to Israel. That's ridiculous. It's all bullshit, boys and girls.